WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Tuesday edition of The Opening Bell. Our focus now returns to the mass shootings in Texas and also in Ohio over the last few days, with the number of dead growing and the number of injured still recovering in hospitals. Authorities are looking for answers in those shootings. A total of 31 people were killed and several dozen people wounded. Investigators in El Paso are zeroing in on a racist manifesto of sorts posted online before the shooting to try to link it to the suspect. And in Dayton, even more questions remain about what spurred the suspected shooter to target a popular nightlife stretch in an attack that left the suspect's sister among the dead. Lots to cover this morning, but the focus we want to take is on whether mental health has anything to do with this, whether mental issues are fueling some of these mass shootings. Joining us this morning is Lori Post, director of the Institute for Public Health and Medicine at Northwestern Medicine's Feinberg School of Medicine. Dr. Post, good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
The notion that mental illness is somehow prerequisite for mass shooters, is that accurate or not?
I would say that is very inaccurate.
And why is that? Because we heard yesterday lots of people trying to make mental health, mental issues somehow front and center for what has happened over the last few days. Do mass shooters necessarily have to have mental issues? And what is the science here that we're looking at?
Right. So I think that what happens is that most people cannot fathom how an individual could go to a public place and, mow down, dozens of people with military rifles. And so to make sense of that, I can see how it's easy to jump to the conclusion that this is a mental health event. However, I can only go by science. I'm a researcher. Just giving you the facts is that I have been tracking mass shootings since 1982, and over the last 37 years of all the mass shooters, only 4% had a real diagnosable mental health illness. So, just based on the science. And there are other academics out there who are also conducting research, and I've heard rates of less than 5%, 4%. So it's pretty consistent.
Yeah, and so the notion, I guess, that we're mixing up the terminology, because obviously you don't, people who would say no one who is sane would kill a bunch of people, but the actual definition of mental illness does not apply.
That is true. It is very true. But also, let me just point this out as well. Let's take the El Paso shooter, for example. This is a man who planned an assault for over a month. He decided what type of weapon to use. He wrote an essay that he posted online. He got himself some body protective armor. He got eye protective gear. He had his ears protected. He had the ammunition in his clothing. He had to plan a 6 to 9 hour road trip from Allen, Texas, down to El Paso, Texas. And that requires a lot of coordination, a lot of planning. And people with mental health problems usually cannot rise to that level of organization, forethought, and planning. They tend to be more disorganized. And then on top of that, people with mental health issues, if they kill, they're more likely to kill somebody that they know. And most of these mass shooters go to places and shoot a bunch of strangers.
So give us a sense of how we should be not only processing this, but dealing with it as a country, not only from just a societal point of view, but also perhaps a criminal justice point of view.
Right. Well, I think that from a criminal justice point of view, ideas that are promising are things like red flagging individuals who are giving off signals that they're a threat to society. So people who are stockpiling weapons, people that are obsessed with hate hate individual groups, hate, you know, such as Latinos or Mexicans, immigrants, Muslims, Jewish people, anybody, African Americans, people who espouse, you know, rhetoric about others that don't belong, people that talk about killing, people that are, you know, romanticizing shooting or shooters or talk about other mass shooters. Those are people who are dangerous, and they should be red flagged, and their weapons should be taken away, and they should, we should keep, you know, track of who poses a threat in America. And I think that would be one way forward to prevent those people from having guns.
Yeah, and so if we look at the El Paso shooting as one example, there is apparently some indication that there has been a history of on Twitter and social media of the shooter there talking about his hatred for different people of different origins. Perhaps that would have helped authorities come on to that. You mentioned the red flag laws. I know Illinois has been working on that, has something like that in place. Other states are working on it. What has been the effectiveness of those?
I think that the jury's still out on a lot of those, but I would have high hopes, because there is research done by one of my colleagues in Michigan, Dr. Zioli, who has looked at taking guns away from batterers, domestic violence batterers. And so she found that if you take guns away from perpetrators of, you know, domestic violence, that the death rate falls, and that they don't, you know, compensate for it by killing their spouse and family by another means. So the question about, oh, it's not the gun, it's the person. So these people are not finding other means to kill the same person when you take their guns away. Guns are just too easy. And I'll also say this, too, is that, you know, that at the very beginning, initially when we learned about the El Paso, Texas massacre, the governor, the mayor, the police chief, they all got online. And the first thing everybody said was, let's not jump to conclusions here. Let's not jump to conclusions. But it looks like this is a mental health issue. And the governor of Texas said the common denominator for all these mass shootings is mental health. So instead of taking a mental health approach and looking at it, which will not help us at all, we should take a historical perspective and look at that. And when I say historical perspective, what would be more helpful in that case is what has this perpetrator done in the past? What are the, you know, the signs that he was violent, it was escalating, but also to look at history, long-term history. So talking about who doesn't belong is very telling about an individual and their hatred. And we, you know, America in general has, you know, called African Americans outsiders or persons from Latin America or Latin American Americans outsiders, when in fact, you know, one third of America is former Mexican territories.
Yeah, and so, I wanted to jump in and ask again about this, the mental health label. There have also been people who say, well, look at other countries. Other countries in the world have mental health issues, but we don't see these mass shootings in those other countries.
Right. Because these are not the acts of mentally ill people overall. I mean, there's a few rare exceptions, but they're not mentally ill. So, but let me say this, that in America, every day, 100 people die from guns, and approximately two-thirds of those are people that commit suicide by gun. And in that part of gun violence, it would be helpful to have mental health providers. However, hatred and psychopathy, anti-personality disorders, these are not mental health conditions that can be remedied through, you know, by identifying them or providing them with mental health care.
And then the other part of this, too, early on in both of these shootings, at least in the El Paso shooting, there were folks who were saying we have a white nationalist, white supremacy problem, a violent white supremacy problem. That's an ideology issue, again, not mental health, and that's going to be tougher to deal with, isn't it?
Not really. I think that one's easier to pick up. So, I mean, this is not his first attempt at sharing or propagating white supremacist ideas. And again, going back to history, this is, you know, how we justify as a country, you know, horrible things we've done to Latin Americans or to African Americans or to minorities, religious minorities, or to gays and lesbians. This is a horrible thing and a horrible part of American history. And I think that, you know, if I had any messages or a public health message for prevention, is at every juncture, we need to stop people who are propagating those types of that type of rhetoric. We need to say that is not okay. This is wrong. It should be reported. It's scary. It should not be acceptable. It should not be tolerated. We should never stand silent on it. Everybody has a responsibility to condemn it and to also report it to authorities.
Lori, we appreciate you being on with us this morning and offering your expertise. Thank you.
Thank you.
Lori Post, who's the director of the Institute for Public Health and Medicine at the Buehler Center for Health Policy and Economics at the Feinberg School of Medicine at Northwestern University at Northwestern Medicine.